Welcome to the New Inches podcast. You're listening to a story from The Essential Sosonko, collected portraits and tales of a bygone chess era by Grandmaster Gena Sosonko. Since the 1980s, he has written extensively for New Inches magazine. Sosonko's chess writings, rather than being technical, chronicle the lives of the former and current top players with whom he has crossed paths. Today's episode is about Garry Kasparov. Born in Baku on April 13, 1963, Garry Kimovich Kasparov became 60 years of age only a few months before The Essential Sosonko was released. The author reflects on many aspects of the enigmatic 13th world chess champion as a chess player and political thinker, and reveals why this chronicle had never been published before. Enjoy the stories in today's reading, narrated by professional voice actor Nick Murphy from The Essential Sosonko, Chapter 58, Garry Kasparov.
Garry Kasparov, His Unlimited Struggle. The main part of this article was written in 2018 for Garry Kasparov's 55th birthday. Before publishing it then, the author reread it and shuddered. The attempted analogies and comparisons, the gloomy examples from world history, the dubious parallels. No, I decided, there is no harm done if it doesn't get published. I'll put it aside for now, and maybe by the next jubilee, his 60th birthday, the same lines will have a quite different ring. In exile, Lenin, who had barely passed his third decade, was nicknamed the Old Man. He said at the time to a party comrade, "The worst of the vices is to be over 55 years old." It is difficult to say what the future leader of the Russian Revolution based his conclusion on, but Lenin himself did not fall into this vice, passing away in his 54th year. His successor, unfortunately, did not follow suit, which ended up costing the lives of many millions of his fellow citizens. But for some reason, Stalin also flirted with the same figure. In a conversation with Leon Furtwängler, he mentioned that he banned the public celebration of his 55th birthday. In a letter from the All-Union Society of Old Bolsheviks, which proposed using his anniversary for a propaganda campaign, Stalin wrote a resolution. "I am against it, since such undertakings lead to the strengthening of the cult of personalities, which is harmful and incompatible with the spirit of our party." And the Politburo decided to respect the request of Comrade Stalin that on December 21, on the day of the 55th anniversary of his birth, no festivities, celebrations and speeches in the press or at meetings should be allowed. Why were both leaders of the Soviet state so interested in the number 55? Were they unnerved by historical parallels? At the age of 55, Julius Caesar was killed, and Emperor Charles V abdicated at the same age and retired to a monastery where he spent the rest of his life. Yes, and the object of Lenin's merciless criticism, Arthur Schopenhauer, starting his latest book, wrote, "I have just passed 55, which means that I am entering an age when life becomes more and more problematic. Even if it continues for a long time, the mental powers still begin to weaken." The philosopher who thought this way was not the only one. In his declining years, Kurt Vonnegut said that he wrote his best books before he turned 55. "My life after 55," the famous writer admitted, "is essentially a giveaway of all sorts of things written a long time ago. I don't like what I'm doing now. Rereading what I have written recently, I must say that it is less clear and interesting than it seemed to me in the process of work, and the first person to notice this is myself." At around 55, Joseph Brodsky passed away. At 55, Kasparov's friend, Russian politician Boris Nemtsov also left us. But his death did not occur from heart disease like Brodsky's. On the contrary, Nemtsov was in excellent shape, young, handsome, bursting with energy. He was killed in Moscow, within arm's length of the walls of the Kremlin. However, back to chess. In his time, Larsen said that the reason Tal lived the lifestyle he did was that he knew he was fated not to live beyond 50. Tal lived to be 55. And Tigran Vartanovich Petrosian also left us at the age of 55. In the last years of his life, the ninth world champion's results began to decline sharply, although not due to his lifestyle, as was the case with Tal, but because of a serious illness which sent Petrosian to his grave. As you will understand, it might not be entirely appropriate to congratulate Garry Kasparov on his 55th birthday, but by his 60th, the danger should have passed. It may seem like a panegyric to the chess of that time, but it is unlikely that Tal and Petrosian would have reached sky-high levels if they had lived at the beginning of the 21st century. Would the Riga boy with the piercing look of burning eyes be captivated by some computer game in which the checkered board gave way to other components? And the son of the Tbilisi janitor, with his incredible talent, but also with his natural laziness and sybaritism? It is doubtful. Can the same be said about Garry Kasparov? Garrick was a great worker from early childhood. He was 10 when Botvinnik, at whose school he began studying, gave him a homework assignment to analyse the ending of the Botvinnik-Fischer game at the Varna Olympiad in 1962. The game had ended in a draw, but with correct play by the American, an ending with queen and rook against queen and rook could have occurred, moreover, with a continuous attack on the white king. Win or draw? For today's computer, this is an elementary task, but then, of course, everything had to be done manually. Garrick had studied this position for almost half a year, twirling it this way and that. And then the admiring Botvinnik published the boy's analysis in his commentary on the game. A book could be written about Garry Kasparov's contribution to the theory of openings during more than a quarter of a century of his involvement in top chess, and I think that not just one such book. After Fischer's departure, there was no one who would work on openings with such fury as Kasparov, and enrich them with new ideas. Intensively studying the initial stage of the game, Kasparov was not satisfied with the assessment of better or slightly better. He went on, never stopping his analysis where others had stopped, and even further and further. He explored not only opening positions, but also middle game and sometimes end game positions. During analysis, he constantly repeated to himself and his assistants, carefully, thoroughly, and he meticulously transferred to paper the results of many days, many months of work in thick notebooks covered in multicoloured ink. In the distant pre-computer time, the author saw a pile of such notebooks in the hands of a very young Kasparov. He set the fashion in chess, and many waited for opening revelations and new ideas from him, listening to the beatings of his chess pulse, just as the Lilliputians listened to the beating of Gulliver's heart at night. Kasparov's methods of total opening preparation were later taken up by his younger colleagues, but it was much more difficult for him. He was a pioneer. He once said, "I'm not interested in repeating other people's moves. Chess for me is the defence of my own ideas, and I get the greatest pleasure from finding ideas, from the very process of inventing them, thinking them up." It is Kasparov who owns the copyright on that global opening preparation, which has become a common occurrence for all the leading grandmasters today. Misha Tal, especially in his younger years, had a colossal mass of vital energy. I can testify the same, if not a greater feeling arose and still arises when communicating with Garry Kasparov. He gushes with ideas, and any conversation with him can be called such only conditionally. Listening to an interlocutor has never been Gary's forte. True, today, he has been softened somewhat by age, life experience, and, most importantly, by his occupation, which provides for the opportunity to give the opponent a chance to speak. But all the same, in the grey-haired and self-absorbed King of Chess, you can, looking more closely, see the temperamental Garrick of the 1980s. We met 40 years ago at the Interpolis tournament in Tilburg in 1981. At the same time, for the first time in his life, he read a book published outside the Soviet Union, Avtukhanov, The Technology of Power. The book captured the young man so much that sometimes, if he had a free minute, he neglected the bike presented to him by the organisers, preferring reading. There, in Tilburg, he also read Solzhenitsyn's The Gulag Archipelago. Kasparov always read incredibly fast, extracting the essence from the content without regard to the style and manner of presentation. What was always more important to him than how? 8 years after his first visit to Holland, when he came to Tilburg in 1989, we also saw each other every day. Perestroika was in full swing, and we talked mostly about events in the Soviet Union. Almost every day brought stunning news then. Although the tournament was played, as always, among elite grandmasters, Gary practically toyed with his opponents. He was in a great mood, repeating after each victory, "License to Kill," the name of the James Bond movie, the poster of which hung right in front of the hotel entrance. Kasparov won with a result unheard of in a tournament of this calibre. 10 wins, no losses, 4 draws. Looking back on that fall, many years later, he would say, "My Elo hit 2800, and that's when." In Tilburg, and then at the tournament in Belgrade, he won 17 games, making only 9 draws and not losing a single one. It seemed that Kasparov's series of brilliant victories would never end. But in 2000 in London, he unexpectedly lost a world championship match to Vladimir Kramnik. Although his tournament victories continued after that, Kasparov never got a rematch, and in 2005 he announced his retirement from chess. The main reason for this was the enduring feeling of déjà vu, best expressed by his beloved Vladimir Vysotsky. "I have already proved everything to myself." He went into politics, which in Russia has always been an unsafe occupation, especially for those who bluntly express their views where they differ from the state line. On March 1st, 2013, Kasparov was forced to leave Russia. The old joke says that instead of emigrating from the country, he decided on something more adventurous. He stayed at home. Gary is not one of the timid, but he did not make such an adventurous decision. He experienced everything. The police bus and the day spent behind bars, and the attempted prosecution and countless provocations, even physical abuse, and unequivocal threats when direct danger began to threaten his remaining at large. And the last straw was Boris Nemtsov's warning: "Bear in mind, the next in line is you." And confirmation of this, a summons that came 2 days after he left Russia, with an urgent request to appear at the investigative committee.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. With the DGT electronic chessboard, millions of chess lovers can follow chess tournaments live. At-home chess fans use the boards to play online or play against chess computers with the same boards that top players use in tournaments all over the world. Play like a pro with a DGT board.
Many people possessing a single spark of greatness manage, with its help, to keep the fire alive almost all their lives. There's nothing shameful in this, but this is not Kasparov's case. Against the backdrop of one outstanding talent, Gary has a wide variety of others. He is a very popular and sought-after political observer and analyst in the West. From month to month, he lectures at various conferences, symposia, and forums, and his face has become familiar on television screens not only in the United States. Continents, countries, and cities flash by with kaleidoscopic speed in the schedule of his performances, and the number of transatlantic flights he does per year is usually more than two dozen. In 2016, for example, he accounted for 27 such, not to mention endless flights within America. Let's add also the constant, time-consuming work in the Kasparov Chess Foundation, trips to the branches of this school, which are open on all continents, and regular publication of books, plus participation in many other projects. Having devoted more than 30 years to chess, Kasparov still tries to be objective and not exaggerate its place in human life. In 2019, he was asked if he could immediately distinguish in a conversation whether a person plays chess or not, and Gary gave an honest answer. The ability to play chess is nothing but the ability to play chess, nothing more. Unlike Tal, who, with magnificent indifference, neglected everything in the physical sphere and shortened his life in all the ways available to him, Kasparov tries to look after himself. Running, cycling, a fitness club, the swimming pool. It could be more correct to say he tries. There is a catastrophic lack of time. And constant flights, transfers, change of time zones and accumulated fatigue simply require passive rest. But even in rare free hours, he does not let go of his iPhone. Not only are current affairs watched, but countless interviews are given. Events in the rapidly accelerating world follow each other with frightening speed, and Kasparov's opinion is interesting to many. One does not envy his future biographer. Kasparov is familiar with so many diverse people that his life would be enough for half a dozen other normal people, and sometimes it seems that it cannot be all this happened to the same person. In an interview before a victorious match with Anatoly Karpov, he said, "I won't spare myself." These words of Gary are, in fact, the motto of his life. Whatever he undertakes, he does it with incredible passion and full dedication of all effort. In 1989, back in the days of the Soviet Union, Kasparov's book, The Unlimited Challenge, was published. 4 years before its release, Gary became the world champion. Then he defended the title and won a few more tournaments and matches. It seemed that the goal had been achieved, and one could stop and take a break. "Many are perplexed. Why do I continue this exhausting struggle? Why risk? I am young, financially secure, and have reached the top of my profession. What else? At some point, after the fourth match," footnote, with Karpov, end footnote, "I also thought, that's it, the war is over. It was an illusion. Only a certain stage of my life had ended, and each time, outgrowing another problem, defeating another opponent, I saw that the main battles were still ahead. Today, I am free from illusions, and I could repeat the words of one of Hemingway's heroes. There were 50 years of undeclared war against fascism ahead, and I had signed on for the duration. My fight is open-ended." This is how the book ends. Although it deals mainly with the champion's chess path, several pages were also devoted to the fight against the sport committee functionaries, who largely shaped FIDE's policy. For the first time, such expressions as freedom of expression, authoritarian ideology, were used in the book. Even then, it was clear that emotions overwhelmed him, and he wanted to say more than he did. Although more than 30 years have passed since then, the 2023 model of Garry Kasparov is still keeping his powder dry, and he is still in his usual state of struggle. "One must not say the things Kasparov says," his enemies in Russia believe. "It is impossible to speak differently," his supporters retort. But both his ardent supporters and furious detractors must constantly keep in mind that in the case of Garry Kasparov, the usual characteristics are inappropriate. How can one, with a plus or minus sign, describe such a natural phenomenon as thunder, waterfall, hurricane? In literature, values can be reassessed, and it happens that writers who are extremely popular in their lifetime are very soon forgotten. In chess, such a changing of the guard is impossible. Capablanca will forever remain Capablanca. Aliekhin, Aliekhin. Botvinnik, Botvinnik. Kasparov's achievements are also indisputable facts. The results of his matches for the World Championship, the tournament tables and the games played speak for themselves. Isn't that the strongest piece of evidence? It would seem that even those who, in Russia, either for a sincere or opportunistic conformist reason, do not like Kasparov's political views, cannot fail to recognize his outstanding successes in chess. But it turns out that this is not the case. In recent years, we have increasingly met with pathetic attempts to smear his name. For several years now, next to the name Kasparov in his homeland, it is obligatory to add the clause, considered in Russia to be a foreign agent. That is so in any text, even chess. The long period when Kasparov single-handedly reigned in the chess world is hushed up, and we are faced even with outright lies. In the match between Garry Kasparov and Vladimir Kramnik, 2000, Kasparov believed that he would easily crush his opponent, but Kramnik chose the openings in such a way as to break Kasparov psychologically, to put pressure on all his weak sides. As a result, after that match, Kasparov left chess, crashing against Kramnik's Berlin Wall in the Spanish game. This is a quote from an interview with the president of the Russian Chess Federation, Andrei Filatov, Izvestia, October 24, 2018. Irrefutable facts indicate the opposite. After 2000, Kasparov did not leave chess. But on the contrary, playing in many elite tournaments, he won almost all of them. And at the tournament in Astana, 2001, he was not only first, but also defeated Kramnik precisely in the Berlin Wall, which he could not break through in the match in London. We can also recall the superfinal of the Russian Championship 2004, where Kasparov's margin over second place was 1.5 points, and also many other competitions. In the Soviet Union, where the social order always prevailed over facts and documents, many historical facts, including chess ones, have been adapted to the needs of today. There are countless examples here, and the most typical case is with Aliekhin, a white guard, a double dealer and a renegade. And then, our great champion, the founder of the National Chess School. In today's Russia, the past is also being cleaned up, and facts are being replaced with myths that serve the interests of the motherland. The United States has become the enemy of today's Russia, and everything good in Western countries is presented in such a way that the shortcomings of one's own country become only advantages. If it is impossible to deny, they refer to the highest value, a national identity, and a path different from other countries in a hostile environment. Ideas that come only from an all-powerful dictator are recognized, and any alternative opinion, any criticism, is perceived as a conspiracy of enemies. But even if the truth is drowned in the informational noise, even if everything that does not correspond to Putin's crazy ideas is called fake, even if nothing and nobody is believed who denies that the government is always right, even if one hates those who criticize this government, the role of Garry Kasparov in world chess is something nobody can doubt. Let those whose names will not be preserved in history inflict their mosquito bites. Let them generally avoid pronouncing the name of the 13th world champion or mention it only in combination with the word traitor. Juggling, hushing up and slander sooner or later comes to an end. And no matter how Kasparov's fate turns out, time is on his side. The view from the future, cleared of tendentiousness and the political order of today, I am sure, will be objective in his homeland. In the most hopeless, dark times in the Soviet Union, the author quoted Homer's lines to Korshnoi, ironically snorting, "I'll tell you this, and all this will be fulfilled for sure. Soon you will be paid three times for the insult with gifts just as beautiful." To this, Victor just shook his head in disbelief and smiled skeptically, because then it seemed completely unbelievable. But it did happen. This year, Garry Kasparov has another anniversary. It's been 10 years since he left Russia and moved to the United States. Kasparov is far from the only world chess champion to have ended up in exile, even if he doesn't like the word himself. His activity in connection with the aggression unleashed by Russia against Ukraine has increased even more. Today, many people remember Kasparov's book Winter is Coming, published back in 2016, with the subtitle Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. The warnings of the 13th world chess champion, alas, turned out to be prophetic, and Kasparov became an even more welcome guest at various congresses and forums, not to mention incessant interviews on the most prestigious television channels in America and Europe. In September 2022, the latest Forum of Free Russia, an organization created by Kasparov in 2016, was held. The forum in Vilnius was attended by hundreds of representatives from 27 countries. Mostly, they were Russians who had left the country, but not exclusively. On the stage, one could see ministers and politicians from Poland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, plus writers and journalists of world renown. From the United States and many European countries, the faces of politicians appeared on huge screens debating the war in Ukraine and the future of Russia when that war ends. I visited this forum and saw Kasparov's working days, debates and answers to questions, numerous interviews and television shoots, continuously replacing each other. And as always, Garry tried to be as frank as possible without softening or toning down his words. Just as in the controversy with Elon Musk a month later about ways to stop Russian aggression, a controversy that attracted a lot of attention and caused numerous responses on the internet. Many then advised Kasparov to be less harsh and even not to mention the name of the outstanding American inventor at all. Maybe that was right, but then he would not be Garry Kasparov, but someone else, more prudent and less temperamental. In December 1986, a strong double-round Grandmaster tournament was played in Brussels. Kasparov was 2 points ahead of the second-placed Korshnoi. One evening, I don't remember in what connection, the conversation between him and Nigel Short turned to the United States. "Yes, I can name all 50 American states right now," said Garry, who, by the way, had never been to the New World before. "All of them?" the Englishman hesitated. "All." They made a bet, and Kasparov got down to business. This list has been preserved, albeit in a somewhat scruffy form. In first place, Garry, who easily won the bet, put New York. You probably don't believe in Freudian slips, much less in premonitions and in the role of the unconscious, but everything coincided. Not only the country, but also the state and the city in this state, and even Kasparov's place of residence today is some 24 blocks from the Manhattan Hotel, where the world champion spent almost a month during his first visit to the United States in 1990, when his last match with Karpov was played. The Russian writer Kornichkovsky once said, "One has to live long in Russia, then something will work out." But you have to live long not only in Russia, you have to live long everywhere, wherever you happen to live. Congratulating the 60-year-old hero of the day, let's wish him many more years and the same seething energy and glow of ideas in all his fields.
This was a story from the book The Essential Sosunko. It is available at newinchess.com. A new podcast will be available every Friday on Spotify and Apple. Check out newinches.com/podcast.